We are talking about paradoxes. And one of the paradoxes that we talked about is this idea that you can scatter and yet increase. That's found in the scriptures. And so that basically brings us to a topic about money and dealing with the funds that we have. Consistently, the scriptures warn us that wealth is an unreliable commodity. For instance, in Proverbs chapter 11, Proverbs 11 and verse 28, Proverbs 11 and verse 28. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like the green leaf. It's just totally untrustworthy. And making wealth your goal then becomes foolishness because of its untrustworthiness. In Proverbs 23 and in verse 4, it says, do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. And it's also dangerous because many evils result from a desire for wealth. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 9, it says, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. The problem with wealth or the desire for wealth is that we oftentimes will make compromises. We'll do things that we maybe should know intellectually we shouldn't do, but we want that money. And ironically, the very desire for wealth, the greed that comes with it, eventually will lead you to poverty. Going back to Proverbs 28 and in verse 22, a man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know that want will come upon him. You know, even the events of tomorrow, we can't predict those things reliably either. In Proverbs 27 and verse 1, it says, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Yet we make commitments to plans that assume that we will not experience, for instance, a salary reduction or layoffs or termination of employment. And we sign mortgage payments, we sign car loans, and too often we end up living life on the edge. Unexpected expenses catch us off guard because we're not prepared for them. And oftentimes I find as people figure, well, they can handle the unexpected by borrowing money. And while borrowing is not necessarily wrong, we know that it's not wise in most cases, because it basically places you under the thumb of the lender. In fact, take a look at Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22 and look at verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. And the reason for this is actually kind of simple. If I owe money to somebody else, well, I got to pay them first. Well, that means I can't make choices with what I'm going to do anymore. I've given away that choice by borrowing money from someone. You know, all of us would like to be generous with others. But a lot of times we look at our bank account and say, well, I just don't have enough. And that's oftentimes because of poor planning. Oftentimes because we borrowed money and, well, we're too busy paying off the money that we borrowed. You got to realize that, you know, you pay people for the privilege of borrowing money. And is it the needy that are getting your extra money? No, the needy can't loan you money. It's the wealthy who loan you money. So it's going to the wealthy. But in Proverbs 22 and verse 16, it says, he who oppresses the poor to make more for himself, or who gives to the rich, will only come to poverty. Giving away your hard-earned cash to the rich, well, that's a way to the poorhouse. Rather, what we need to do is learn a lesson from the ant. That's what Proverbs 6 tells us. Solomon encourages us to look at God's world, and there's a lesson we can learn from the ant. In Proverbs 6, verse 6, it says, go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which, having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provisions in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. You know, the ant survives without any obligation to others to prepare for the future. And the point is that without preparation, debt will eventually catch you when you least expect it. I might not know the precise future, but I do know there's going to be good times, and I know there are going to be bad times. The world's been running like that since it was created. If I'm smart, I'll put aside a portion during the good times to carry me over the bad times. And, you know, it would make sense. And isn't that what Joseph did for Pharaoh? Take a look at Genesis 41. Joseph predicted through God's dreams that there were going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. In Genesis 41, verse 25, then now Joseph said to Pharaoh, the Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears of corn are 7 years. And the dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 years of thin ears, scorched by the east wind, will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of abundance are coming to all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will ravage the land. So, and the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dreams to Pharaoh twice, it means the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Now, let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. And then Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this, whom in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. The basic proposal that Joseph gave him was to say, what you need to do is put aside 20% for those 7 years. Now, typically, most countries in those days basically charge a 10% tax. So he's saying double the taxes. But it's going to be so good, so plenteous, people aren't going to notice the extra taxes. And then when the hard years come, we'll have a reserve to carry us over. By saving 20% for 7 years, Joseph was not only able to bring Egypt out of the 7 years of famine, he had sufficient to supply the people in the regions around. They had an abundance. Go back to Proverbs. And in verse 21, and Proverbs chapter 21, I should say, in verse 20. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 20. There is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. Therein lies the biggest problem. Money seems to burn holes in everybody's pockets. It's hard to think about hard times when the times are good. And when there's a whole bunch of extra money, we tend to spend the extra money because we have extra money. You know, that old, I think there was, it used to be a song about it. You know, that, you know, when the sun's shining, you know, the hole in the roof is not a pressing matter. What God is telling us is if we're smart, we'll live on less than what we earn. We'll put things aside, knowing that sometime there's going to be hard times. So why aren't we making preparation? Why don't most people do that? Save away money. Well, that's, the proverb writer says, because we're lazy. Take a look at Proverbs 20. And in verse 4, the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. We don't make preparations because rather not think about it. I'm kind of lazy that way. It means tightening the belt a little bit, but we don't want to think about that. I run across every once in a while somebody will say, well, I just don't make enough to save. But go back to the ant again. The ants are not strong. Now, when an ant carries away some grain to put away, it's not that much. But every little bit adds up. Take a look at Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30 in verse 25. The ants are not a strong people, but they prepare their food in the summer. Ever thought about why he says summer? Summer is a time when it's hot. Everybody likes to be lazy during the summer. And there's abundance of stuff around anyway, and it's not a pressing issue. But if you prepare during the good times, even though it's hot and it's a little difficult, then when the winter comes, there's something set aside. Even a small amount, a little bit at a time, is better than nothing. And a small amount regularly stored will build over time. You know, the only counter to uncertainty, because life is uncertain, is to plan for uncertainty. Now, if you're going to plan for uncertainty, I can guarantee you, impulsive decisions are not going to help you any. They're just not going to work. Going to Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21 and verse 5 says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty." It's almost a guarantee. You plan things out, things tend to work a little bit better than just, let me do something off the cuff. Similarly, in Proverbs 28, it warns in Proverbs 28 and verse 20, it says, "A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished." I don't know how many people I've run across that fall for every get-rich-quick scheme that's out there. Half the scams are based on those things. "Oh, I got some money that I'm supposed to give to you. I want to sell you something really cheap." Thinking that, hey, this is a way to, I can buy this and I can sell it back off and I can make a whole bunch of money. When people tell you that you can make more money than you can imagine while doing almost nothing, the best answer to that is run. Because it won't work in the long run. Even if it happens to work once, it won't work in the long run. Don't speculate. Because the future is uncertain. To invest in something on the chance that prices will go up or down is a sure way to the poorhouse. Along with that is the idea is don't gamble. Gambling is a waste of money. The gambling houses set their odds so that they make a huge profit. You have 5 times greater chance of being struck by lightning than winning most lotteries. One person like this, I think it's Dave Ramsey, likes to say gambling is simply a tax on the ignorant. Or the tax on the people who can't do math. When discussing becoming a disciple, the Lord urged people to use common sense and consider what you're obligating yourself to. And he gives proof of this in Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14 and in verse 28. It says, "For which of one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" Everybody should understand that before you take on a project, you plan out the possibilities. Now, what Jesus is talking about is that the project is becoming a Christian. You ought to, before you become a Christian, think about the possibilities. Plan on how to be a Christian, because you're making a commitment for the rest of your life that reaches into eternity. You need to know what you're doing. Well, that same rule applies to everything else, too. Before I commit to something, I really need to know how I'm going to do it. If I'm going to borrow money to buy a car, I need to know how I'm going to pay for that car. And what I'm going to do if the unfortunate things, you know, things like, you know, getting laid off or something, economy goes sour, what am I going to do with it? How am I going to deal with that? Unfortunately, we live in a society where common sense is uncommon. The wise man plans. His actions are based on knowing where he's at. Go back to Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs 13 and in verse 16. Every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool displays folly. Prudence is the idea. It's an old word that basically means knowing how things are going to turn out, looking into the future, foreseeing possibilities. The prudent man, he says, acts with knowledge. Can't make decisions if you don't know what you're deciding or what the options are. In fact, what the proverb writer tells us is first get some advice. In Proverbs 20, in verse 18, prepare plans by consultation and make war by wise guidance. Before you commit to something, talk to other people. And advice is good for a king. Hey, I've done lots of wars. I know what's going on. The problem is one person doesn't see everything. We're not all knowing. And I might miss something. Even if I'm an expert at something, I might overlook an idea. Okay? It's so easy to deceive ourselves and think, hey, I don't need any advice. I'm perfectly fine the way I am. In Proverbs 12 and in verse 15, the way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. And for those of you married, it's amazing how many people overlook the advice of their spouse. Here's another person close to you that sees the world differently than you do. And it's a good thing to have a different input. Now, of course, when you're getting advice, you want to have credibility with your advisors. You want people that hopefully know what they're talking about. In Proverbs 13 and verse 20, it says, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. The idea is that, you know, if I'm wanting to, you know, put some money away to save it and make a good investment, talking to the janitor is probably not the greatest idea. Now, maybe the janitor really knows how to save money. Okay, he might be, you know, you never know. But most of the time, we don't talk to, you know, some guy on the street to ask for medical advice. We go look for an expert in that field. If you got something, go find an expert. Find several. Find some people that have been successful at doing it. Get their advice. The more advice you have, the better off you will be. In Proverbs 15 and in verse 22. Proverbs 15, verse 22. Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they will succeed. Now, not everybody's going to give you the same advice. And not everybody's advice is going to be good. But at least now I can see the world from different perspectives. I can think about why is this maybe not a good idea, why this person is giving a totally different view. But the more information I have, the better I'm going to be at making choices. I'm looking at the clock and I'm looking at how much my notes are. I'm definitely not going to finish in time. So I think I'm going to pause here. And we'll talk about more of this hopefully in 2 weeks. That's when I think the next time I'm scheduled. So I'm going to hold it there. But I want to talk about the plans that you have. We talk, you know, we're talking about money. We're talking about things. And that, as we mentioned this morning, it's just, this is stuff of the world. We need to be good stewards of what we have. But we need to think about the future much more. We need to think about what happens after this world. What are we planning for the rest of our eternal lives? There's an opportunity, if there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, to put on Christ, to do His will, and lay up treasures in heaven. And for those who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.